that's been still rare, where Greendale or Greenfield has had to come in and transport one of our patients, at least since we made this switch.
Oak Creek, too, or no?
Yeah, Oak Creek as well. And those are all predetermined. So based on the area of the city where the call is, it gets toned out to the appropriate community.
The 2015 numbers are in the report that you got for 2015. The chief hasn't done, I'm sorry, 16, hasn't done 17 yet, but it's, we can get you those numbers.
I can, I have graphs and charts.
Correct.
The what? The annual report?
Annual report, oh. Yeah. And if you don't have it, let me know. I'll send you one.
And back-to-back responses are handled that same way. We have 5 units in the mix, and it could be, you know, Station 2 covering Station 3's area or Station 1 covering Station 2's area. That's all very fluid on any given day.
But it'd be the 6th one that would trigger someone else coming in?
Or a fire.
Or a fire.
But you'll see that in a minute.
Yeah, I'll go over fire response. So, and when I say fire response, we're talking actual reports of smoke or flame in a structure. We get lots of, you know, alarm sounding. We get a lot of burning complaints. We get a lot of stuff that isn't full-blown serious fire calls. For a full-blown fire call, everybody in the city is going. Assuming everyone's in the stations at the time the call comes in, Stations 1 and 3 are going to just park their ambulances. All 4 guys jump in that engine, and they're out the door as fire companies on that call. Med 282 is still going to respond as an ambulance in case there's a victim, a burn victim, something happens to one of our guys. We want an ALS unit there right away. So they're going to respond as a medical resource. Now, if it is a fire and it's in Station 2's primary area, they're going to take it as a fire unit. They're going to jump on that cross-staffed fire apparatus and respond. They can pull lines. They can start doing stuff. They can't enter that building per state law until we have 5 guys on that scene. So they'll need one of the other fire resources to show up, and they'll also need the incident commander to be on scene as well. Our battalion chief goes, and we automatically pick up a truck from Greendale if it's a full-blown fire alarm. There's pros and cons to this response change that we've made, and I think overall, for the most part, I think the people here would agree it's working very well. It seems to be efficient, and as I said, there have been very few times where we've actually had to rely on other communities coming in. Usually by the time they're coming in, one of our units committed to an earlier call is freeing up, so we're, again, it's constantly in motion, but it's efficient as far as covering our current volume. The fact that we don't have BLS units that are transporting patients, that's keeping more of our guys in the city on those engines and ready to respond, whether it be fire calls or EMS calls. As we said, this was part of our goal. There's at least 3 paramedics on the scene of every call, so Franklin residents are getting immediate access to the highest quality ALS medical care. I can skip. There are some drawbacks as well. As we said, we're covering our calls, but things are in constant motion, and we routinely get up to the point where one more call and we would not be able to handle it. That makes it very hard to complete other daily tasks that we need to do. Some of it's required by state law. As I said, inspections and public education are both requirements of state law. Our training requirements are set by ISO and NFPA. Now, they're recommendations. But if you're not meeting enough training hours and something happens or somebody gets hurt, the first thing they're going to do is, let's see your training records. You're going to be answering to OSHA if you're not meeting what the recommendations are. Facility apparatus maintenance repair, we get to it when we can, but calls take precedent over everything else, and sometimes that stuff gets pushed off. We would like to do more pre-incident planning. That's when we have a building where we know it's a hazard, where it could be dangerous, a high life safety building or something that could be dangerous to our people. We want to get out there and we want to have a pre-plan in place for that. As it is, again, calls come first and that stuff gets pushed off and we don't get to do as much of it as we would like to. Dive training, technical rescue training, these are very high-risk, low-frequency events. And to train and be proficient at that, you have to train with a lot of time and a lot of intensity. So we would like to be doing more of that as well. Our EMS training are required by the state in order to maintain our paramedic certification and licensure. We have to renew that every 2 years. And during that two-year period, we need at least 48 hours of focused continuing education. But we also have CPR training we have to do. We have advanced life support. We have many other classes. And again, these are just the minimum. Also, drawbacks, again, it's our Station 2 staffing. We've had to put our four-man companies in our stations that have traditionally been the busiest and been the majority of our calls, but now Station 2 call volume is increasing as well. So they can't handle an individual, even a medical call, without depleting from the other stations. That depletes the response readiness to those other stations as well. So it's a vicious cycle. As I said, some of our secondary units that we send as support if we have a critical call, such as a cardiac arrest, some of those secondary units are not going to get there in the time objectives that we have set for ourselves. Station 2 is also, it's the first due unit to Wheaton Hospital. It's the first due unit to Milwaukee County House of Correction. These are high life safety risks if something bad were to happen in those places, and a two-person response to that is not an effective response force, is what NFPA refers to it as. Also, important note, the entire business park is within Station 2's response area. We had a really big fire there a couple years ago with the battery company, and a two-person engine really can't do much pulling up on that. Now, granted, they're not going to rush in and do anything foolish. You're going to evaluate that situation, and you're going to come up with a plan, but two people doesn't allow you to do
20 departments had a tough time with that, much less two guys.
So just some visuals here that I'll go through really quick for you. This was actually South Milwaukee put this particular chart together when they were getting ready to do their referendum.
Chief, interrupting, sorry. This is key here. Per 1,000 residents, this is not levy, this is not any of the convoluted arguments that we get into. This is per 1,000 residents. So it's a one-for-one, mano-a-mano cost cycle.
This is actual fire department staffing. So we have 1.23 people per 1,000 residents. You can see Wauwatosa more than two. The others tend to be more close towards two, but not quite
over. Milwaukee.
Oh, huge.
Per 1,000, I mean. They have tinder boxes lined up next to each other all throughout
the city. Yeah, with their recent cuts, that's probably come down significantly, but I'd have to research that for you.
James, you got that already?
Should be easy enough.
We may have that. Hold on. Natalie, when you get it, just yell it out. Tosa, the big boys, at two, and they're three.
Okay. So this is from Municipal Facts magazine, and their data is a little bit old. This is 2014. You can see we're on the low end of that. Some of those departments further right are actually rely more on part-time and volunteer staffing. Sun Prairie, I think at that time, was mostly volunteer.
Bertram's
but again, you can see
volunteer.
I've highlighted the other Milwaukee County departments.
New Berlin's still volunteer, partly.
Berlin has part-time employees that, I don't know.
They staff, I believe, four stations now with full-time employees that they supplement with part-time employees.
Good for Lloyd. Again, this is per capita, so there's no fooling around with assessed value and all the rest of that stuff.
And again, the departments in yellow are other Milwaukee County departments.
Our buddies in Greenfield.
Oak Creek, for example, we do more call volume than Oak Creek. we always joke that they have power plant money that lets them do whatever they want. So
pretty accurate.
There's some truth. Some truth to that.
We say that in election stuff.
So since 1996, and that date's somewhat arbitrary, but that's the date as far back as I can go and have pretty high-level confidence in the data that's provided. So that's, I was looking initially at 20 years when I started working on this in 2016, and as it happens, 1996 is about when I can really vouch for the quality of the data. So during that period, Franklin's population has increased by 40%. The problem is our annual calls for service during that same period has increased by 143%. And as I said, we're over 4,000 now for the first time, and that trend looks to be, is going to continue. Here's our sworn firefighter full-time equivalencies. There was a little bump up back in 2007. We lost a deputy chief position, but we hired two frontline firefighters. That brought it up to our present staffing, which is 44.
What year do we, what, I mean, Dan wasn't here, Mark wasn't here, Solomon and Olson, Tom was mayor. Did I bring in, through the budget, we added another body? When was, what year was that? Because that doesn't show up there. I know we did it.
Seven.
No, because I got here in eight.
Right. It had to be.
So it was like 11?
That may
12.
Have been the year where there was cuts proposed.
No, it was, add, we added, to go back on the...
We added two in 07.
Yeah, but we did something in between there that's not showing up, because I remember that was through Finance Committee. Linda Bull was there. Kristen was on Finance. Tim Solomon. We added, we went from 10 to 11 or something. So you check that out, because that's not right.
Yeah, it's 11 per day is what we're at now.
And you weren't before we changed that.
We didn't get a body to do that. Those two bodies that we got in 2007...
Okay, this is prior to, this is after 2007.
But what I'm saying is when we got those two extra firefighters, that gave us just enough firefighters to staff at that time to our 11 person minimum instead of the 10.
So we drop below it somewhere?
It may have been a vacancy. It may have been an unfunded vacancy.
I'd like you to check that out. I want to say it's 11, maybe.
I was thinking 9.
9?
We'll find out.
That's not something's missing there.
So this is our record management screen. This is activity of calls for service for 2007, January 10th. This is what our activity looks like today. Obviously, we're quite a bit busier. And if you look at each of those blue and red, and they have an address after them, each of those is a call for service. The blue ones are EMS calls, and that represents up to about an hour and a half where that ambulance might be out of the station and unavailable, depending on where we transport that patient to. If it's further, like freighter for a trauma patient, it's going to be more towards 1.5 hours or even more if there's extensive, you know, cleanup or something like that involved. As we said, the engines roll out to support the ambulances on EMS calls. They're usually there for 20 or 30 minutes, and our scene times have come down. It's improved the system by sending the engine along with the ambulance. Now, the red calls are fire calls, and those can be anything from just an alarm sounding and we find nothing when we get there and pick up after 10 or 15 minutes, or it could be a multiple-hour event where we have other communities and other fire departments all tied up here for multiple hours.
Once a fire call, and she said if there's a fire call, then everybody goes. Is that correct? So then how long does it take to basically disperse the other two if it's nothing serious? Like, you get there, what's the time?
You can turn them around before they even get on scene. So if we get to the scene and there's nothing going on, we get on the radio and tell them to turn around and go back to quarters. So it can be very quick.
Pretty quick if it's done.
If it's a major event, if it is actual structure fire or something like that, it's going to be a few hours where everybody in the city is tied up. We might have other departments taking EMS calls for us during that duration. And we try to bring in our people off duty to staff ambulances as well during that period.
That is right there.
Just as an example of that, when we do have a fire, if we do go to that the Mavis box alarm level, we will get an engine from Cudahy and a West Dallas Med unit.
They will come into our city and staff our station, not for the event that's going on necessarily, but to handle whatever call other calls come in the city during that time.
And just another thing on there, if you look at the EMS calls, don't take that no patient to mean that there's no patients. We just don't use this as our medical records platform.
We're logging the calls and the times in here, but not necessarily patient care or medical data or anything like that. So this is our call volume by occupancy type, and you can see it's increasing pretty much in every occupancy type in the city. Some are faster growing than others, and I will talk about senior housing in just a minute here.
Can you go back to that?
Thank you.
More mobile homes?
What'd you say?
You're going to have this. You're going to email us this. Sure. I like to have these. Yeah, the slideshow. Okay, that's fine. But.
So here's our total calls for service per 1,000 residents. Now, if you think about it, that line should be flat if your community is staying the same. The fact that it's going up or down tells you something in the community is changing. The most obvious answer.
Adam, can you go back
that,
a second, please? This is Clear Meadows, I think.
Yeah, some of those spikes are
2007.
What's interesting, though, is one repeat patient can have a significant effect on this graph. We can have one repeat patient that might call 20, 40, 50 times in a given year, and that has a big impact on this graph.
We had one that was like 400 times in 1 year. She lived on 27th Street. We had to have a meeting with Martins Borkowski and I to stop that nonsense. I think we got her chapter 55 or 1 or something like that.
That's this spike right
nuts.
Here.
Where is she? Yeah, right there. You got to go. I mean, can you get something out of my fridge? All this garbage she was calling in on. Terrible. Seriously, you should see these calls.
We still have them. We still got them.
Not that one.
Not that bad, but yeah.
They just come to the Alderman now.
There's always one. There's always one.
This
that
is a
we're
good one.
Dealing with that any given.
The
time.
Hoarder also hoarder.
Bob Mankey's favorite lift assists. I can't joke about that. Maybe.
It's like a combustible fire waiting to happen with her.
So the simple, and there may be other factors, but the most obvious is that we're all getting older. Our median population age in Franklin has increased since 2000 from 38 to 41.8. That's pretty significant, and especially the national average is 37.7. Since that time, the number of Franklin residents 65 or older has increased from about 2,900 to over 8,000, and that's an estimate per 2016 census data. That's 175 increase in less than 20 years. Along with that comes a lot of assist calls and help calls, you know, help up elderly people that fell. Sometimes we get called, like you said, we have to transfer people from their wheelchair into bed every night or from their bed into the wheelchair every morning. We get a lot of those calls. We get about 800 assist calls per year, and I'll explain those further in just a second here. So not only is our population aging, we're also attracting more senior population to our community. This senior housing, and these are largely the Brentwood Parks, the Highland Park, Clare Meadows. This is our call volume associated with those developments. As we said, when we get called for assist type services, we still have to dedicate resources for sometimes maybe up to an hour, even if we're not transporting that patient. So we still have to send the resource. The thing is, for those types of calls, they're largely not billable to Medicare and Medicaid. And if they were, well, if we did bill the people for that, we risk two things. We risk deterring somebody from calling us who really needs our help. Where is I going with that? So Medicare, when we respond and transport a patient to the hospital, we send a bill to that patient's insurance provider. Medicare pays less than 50% of that. Medicaid pays somewhere between 20 and 30% of that. So as millions of people are transferring off of private insurance and onto Medicare and Medicaid as the baby boomer population, we're going to see conversely or paradoxically, our call volume is going to keep going through the roof. At the same time, our reimbursement for handling those calls and covering those costs is going to decline over time. So that's kind of the unique challenge of senior housing is we understand why it's attractive to the city. There's no impact on the police department. There's no impact on the schools. It's, you know, a good population to have in your city. The problem is it's a little bit more of a affects EMS more than any other city departments. So our present and future staffing consideration, it's really the high density residential development that drives our call volume. At least the changes and increases in our call volume. So we risk that that's going to expand beyond our existing capacity to be able to handle those in a reasonable amount of time and with our current resources. The other problem is that this isn't just going on here. This is going on all over the area. So the other departments that we traditionally work with and call on for help, they're not always there. More and more often, departments are taking a pass, and we have to get the next closest department after that. That goes for us as well. We have to take passes when people request services from us. So all the infrastructure and with development comes more traffic. Is going to increase travel times, make it more difficult to cover our secondary response areas. There's residential development that's currently proposed or going on in areas that are not very easier for us to get to, and I'm thinking the residential development 76 and Oakwood area. Station 2 can get there pretty quick if they're in quarters, but it's going to be hard for other units to get there in a reasonable amount of time. And again, we talked about having a two-person engine company respond to very high value and maybe very high population commercial and residential development. And last I put in there the Foxconn effect. This is going to have a big impact on the southern part of the county. We don't know what that is yet and what that's going to do to the housing here, our call volume, traffic. We just don't know what that effect is going to be yet, but it's
back up one, please. This one, only station in the county with less than three personnel. The issue here for all of us is Station 2 covers the area where we're going to experience arguably the most growth in the future. I mean, it's all this.
Can you pull up the Station 2 map again? I mean, to show the map of all of them.
I answered that, by the way, Steve.
I'll send I know. Oh, good, because I asked him. I sent him an email, and he didn't bother the mayor to give me an answer I didn't like. But I gave him the same one, I'm sure. Okay, so here's the reality on that. That's like 90%. I mean, that Station 2 is 90% of mine. So those are my constituents in that. And that's where the growth is going to happen. And then obviously a portion of that is Nelson's. And then Station 1, that portion of blue is also Nelson's as well. But in terms of the population, I mean, North Orion, that's all residential in that. I mean, I'm just in the corner, I think, of Station 3. What I'd like to have is the last five, I mean, send it to me, but the last 5 years, how many actual fires where we basically are all in, where the rest of the city, coming from Station 2, I mean, coming from Station, that to me is a big deal right there when, you know, it's the hardest to get to places, number one, based on what you're telling me, and number two, then we're all tied up. Right. And then we only have two guys showing up, and they can't do what's necessary. So forget, I mean, the senior issue, I know we have to talk about in that, but that in itself has been an issue, I'm sure, well before any proposal for senior housing in the last couple years. So last five, how many out of two
I like to have those numbers.
Well, you were ringing the bell this year. I think most
I know.
Of the fires we got it all.
I know.
And in your neighborhood.
Exactly.
Mayor.
Maybe your house.
No, they're not. There's people who don't like me. They like to torch it probably.
How does the impact fees per new development, new residential, assist in your...
That's for equipment and facilities.
That would be if we had to build a new station, but I don't... And I believe that was maybe the strategy they used back when they built Station 2. Part of that was impact fees. Maybe you can answer that better than I can.
You're getting how much per house for the fire department?
It's still paying off our ladder truck.
Yeah.
Truck 2.